All right, we begin here on the top of Chof Avim and Aleph by the two dots. Gemara here is discussing the discussion between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah. Rabbi Shmuel says that Enu Chayev Ela Atid Lavo, that a Shvuat Bitui that results in a Korban is only for something when you take a Shvuah about the future, meaning that you're making a statement about what you will do or what you will desist from, and then you violate that Shvuah. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva believes that it's both the Atid as well as the Abar. It has application both for forward-looking Shvuot, as well as a Shvuah about something that took place already, a statement of fact about what you did or didn't do in the past. There the Gemara brings a Braita that explicates on their positions, which is Tarabanan, Lehara Odehetiv, which is the key words in the Psukim that lead us this way. Ein li ela dvarim sheish ben hara'a vehatava. Those are only things that have good and bad associated with them. Now, we discussed this in the past about what that means, hara v'hatava, but loosely can be positive in the sense that it's beneficial to you, negative in the sense that it is detrimental to you. So, for instance, if you say, I'm going to eat, that is something that is beneficial to you. If you say, I'm not going to eat, that is something that is detrimental to you. What happens to items that are either neutral in fashion or don't have this concept of the Ra'al HaTava? So that's what the Braita is saying. Im li ela dvarim sheish ben harav hatava. She'ein bahen harav hatava minayin. How do I know that those are also included? Talmud lomar o nefesh ki tishava levatei besvatayim. So that is the riboy that a nefesh ki tishava levatei besvatayim. If you take a shvuah, then you are going to be chayav. That's only true about the future, because again, is a future tense. How do I know that it has application to the past? So again, here the chol is a riboy. Vivrei Rabbi Akiva. This is Rabbi Akiva's position, who believes that both in the future and the past tense, tuat bitui is relevant. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, la ra'al oitiv la'haba. Ra'ul Etiv is said in the future tense, and therefore there's only shvuot that are in the future that you're going to be chayav for. Amalo Rabbi Akiva, im kein, en eli dvarim sheish ben atava v'hara'a. Dvarim sheish ben hara'a v'atava minayin. So Rabbi Akiva's response to Rabbi Shmuel is, if you're going to take Ra'ul Etiv so literally that it means only in the future, then take it so literally that it means only things that are hara and hatava. Only things that are positive and detrimental to the individual, other types of shvuot should not be included at all. How do you then include other shvuot? Amarlo mi ribui akatuf. So Rabbi Shmuel responds to him, that's why we have a ribui in the pasuk, to teach you not just hara and atava, but even other types of shvuot that are in the future, all of those would be included in shvuat bitui. Amarlo im riba katuv lekach, riba katuv lekach. So he says, listen, if the pasuk already includes broader context than harav hatava, then it should include also the past. Meaning that Rabbi Akiva's claim to Rabbi Shmuel is, if you take it literally, I understand. Hara o lahitiv means in the future, so only shvuot are in the future. Number two is only shvuot that have hara and hatava. So if I put those together and you take it literally, I can accept your position. But once you're already saying that we're not going to take hara o lahitiv literally, because you're going to say that even things that are not hara'a and hatava are also going to be included, then you should already include the avar as well. Once you're not taking it literally, and you're including broader context or a broader swath of issues, then it also should include the avar. And the Gemara says, Shapir Kamali Rabbi Kiva Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Kiva's claim against Rabbi Shmuel is pretty strong. Am Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Shmuel Shishimesh et Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana Sheya Doresh et Kol HaTura Kula Bichlal Uprat. Iunami Doresh Bichlal Uprat. So Rabbi Shmuel, whose Rebbe was Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana, who was Doresh in the methodology of Klal Uprat Uchlal. So he is Doresh Klal Uprat Uchlal. Rabbi Kiva Shishimesh et Nachum Ish Gamzu. So Rabbi Kiva, whose Rebbe was Nachum Ish Gamzu, Shaya Doresh et Kol HaTura Kula Biriba Umiut, that he uses the methodology of Ribu Umiut. Iunami Doresh Riba Umiut. He also uses that methodology over here, and those result in different outcomes in the situation. My Rabbi Akiva. So what is this that Rabbi Akiva does? The Darish Ribuye Umiute Detanya. O Nefesh Kiti Shava Riba. Laharal etiv miyet. The chol asher yivateh ha'adam chazar v'riba. Riba umiyet v'riba, riba kol. So here you have the methodology that's called riboy umiyot. We had this earlier in the Masechta. The way that it works is that it is always one step ahead of klal upratu klal. So whatever you would think that happens and you're more familiar with, because we say it in Rabbi Yishmael every morning, a klal upratu klal, ribo umiyot to riba is one step ahead of that. It includes more. So here we have a riboy, a miyot, and a riboy, riba kol. My riba, riba kol mile. It includes everything. My miyet, miyet dvar mitzvah. And it's miyet one thing. The key difference between riboy, miyot, and riboy versus klal upratu klal is that the way that klal upratu klal works is that the prat is a definition or gives definition to the klal. That's the way Rashi terms it in other places, which is that we look to the prat to give us explanation for the klal. And therefore, anytime you have a klal uprat or even a klal upratu klal, the prat itself is going to define the klal. And then by riboy, miyot, to riboy, we see them as being independent issues, and that each one stands alone. So in a riboy, miyot, to riboy, riba kol, we include everything. The miyot allows you to be ma'id one thing. So that's it. There's one miyot over here. Everything's included, and you have one miyot. So what's the miyot? Miyot dvar mitzvah. It excludes something that is a mitzvah, which is the upcoming Mishnah on tomorrow's daf, that you can't take a shavua to mevatel the mitzvah, you can't take a shavua to mekayim a mitzvah, because you're mushba ba'omeid mehar sinai. So that is the miyot that comes out of here. Otherwise, everything else is included. So for Rabbi Akiva, that means both latid, la'avar, hara hatava, and not hara and hatava. Everything's included. Rashi already raises the issue that there are other things that you could have excluded over here. For instance, if you wanted to be mishaneta yadula adam, if you're taking a shvua about something that's obvious and that is clearly incorrect, that's also something that's not a shvua to be toy. So Rashi says that b'yit bar mitzvah subsumes within it anything that is impossible, she'ef shar, something that you can't take a shvua about. You can't take a shvua to be mevatel a mitzvah. You can't take a shvua to change something that is known. You can't change a stone into gold by a shvua. So those are all in the same category, according to Rashi, and that's the miut of Dvar Mitzvah. So Tosafot also asks the same question and says, why don't you use it to exclude things like the Lav Vehain that Rav had mentioned yesterday, or Shmuel, who says that it has to be Mashaleta Ba'avar and Atid, that it's something that has to be both true in the future and the past tense. So he says, Mitzarech Lomar, the Shkulim Heim, that those are all on an equal plane. The Manda Dorish Riba Umiut Uriba Leitland Mute Lachada Milta. All those things are on an equal plane, and therefore he has to pick one thing to exclude. And this is the thing he excludes. So he doesn't exclude those things, but rather he excludes this one issue, which is Dvar Mitzvah. That's what Tosafot says. But you see here that the Rishonim are toying with the issue that it's not as simple as saying that there's only one thing that left out. There are more things that are excluded, despite the fact that riboy miyot to riboy. And Rashi, in the end, says it's a genre of shvua that's left out, which is miyot dvar mitzvah, something that is efshar, something that is impossible. Rabbi Shmuel darish klal uprat. Rabbi Shmuel does the drasha of klal uprat. That's Rabbi Shmuel Omer that you say at the end of Korbanot every morning. Oh nefesh kitishava levate bisfatayim klau, darau leitiv prat, kol ashe yivate adam, chazaru klau, klau upratu klau, iatadan elekeina prat. So as opposed to riboy miyot to riboy, where we ribet a kol, and the miyot excludes one thing, klau upratu klau, as we mentioned before, the prat gives definition to the klau. So the klau here is coming to include as much as possible, but it's going to be governed or defined by the prat. And that means it's going to be ke'ein ha-prat. It has to be similar to the detail that was here. Ma prat ha-mifurash la-haba, af kol la-haba. Just like the prat is something that is in the future, which is ara u-le-itiv, so too, anything similar to it will be included that is in the future. Ahani klala la-tuye al-tefilu dvarim she'ein bein hara va-tava la-haba. The klal upratu klal helps you to include things that are even not hara, not tava, but things that are in the future. So that is that it keeps the integrity of the prat, which means it's something in the future, but the klal tells you to include more than simply harava tava, even things that are not harava tava. Ahani prata limutei afil dvarim sheish ben harava tava l'shavar. And the prat comes to exclude things that are in the past tense, even though they have hara and hatava to them. So Gemara says, ipochana, how did you know which way to go with this? If the prat defines the klal, then how did you know to pick the fact that the future is the most important aspect of this, and therefore you're willing to waive hara and hatava as long as it's in the future? Why don't you go in the other direction? Say that hara and hatava is the most important factor here, irrelevant whether it's in the future or the past. How do you know which thing to include and which thing to exclude, or which to emphasize in the prat to say is fixed or stationary and cannot be changed versus the things that you have flexibility with? Samar Rav Yitzchak Dumya Dalara Ulehitiv. Mishi Yisuro Mishum Bal Yachel Dvaro. Yatztazu Shein Yisuro Mishum Bal Yachel Dvaro Mishum Bal Tishakru. The way to understand the prat is to understand that the reason you're going to be chayav in this shvua is because of bal yachel dvaro. Because you took a shvua, and a violation of that shvua is then an abrogation of the shvua that you took. That is only true when you take a future tense shvua. You take a shvua about the future, then you can breach the shvua and be bal yachel dvaro, and then profane your word. If you take a shvua about the past, you are not going to be bal yachel dvaro, because whatever has happened already. Either you are lying or you're not lying at that point in time. It's bal tishakru. So he says that the prat comes to teach you that the violation has to be a violation in which you will profane your word, meaning that you will breach the shvua, not something where it's bal tishakru, where automatically at the moment you take the shvua, then it's a shvat sheker. And that's how he knows that the emphasis is on the atid, and not on the hara and hatava, because that's the key element here. The key element is not to violate the shvua that you took. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avin Amar Amar Kra. So Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avin offers another alternative way to show why Rabbi Shmuel went this way. Amar Kra, the pasuk says, Unefesh kitisha vada vate basfatayim, mishva shvua kudemet the bitui. The person who the shvua comes before the expression, velosha bitui kudemet the shvua. And not the expression before the shvua. In essence, what he is saying here, and Rashi says this, is it's a difference between maise and shvua. So the view here is the vatei besvatayim hitishava. He's taking a shvua, and then the vatei besvatayim is to carry out his word. So he takes a shvua, and then he takes the action. So we're looking for something where there's a shvua and then an action, not somewhere where the action already took place. And now you're taking a shvua. Yatzazeh, achalti, velo achalti, shamaseh, kodim l'shvua. And here you have it in summary. Excluded from that is someone who says, I ate, or I didn't eat, because there the action already took place, and the shvua is successive to the action that you took before, and that's not what we're speaking about here. Tosafot points out that this alone is not enough. Together with ara leitiv, in combination, those two things would indicate to you that we're speaking about the future tense. This standalone is not enough, but together, combined with the other, that would work to show you that that is the reasoning behind Rabbi Shmuel. So we have two methods to explain Rabbi Shmuel. Again, Rabbi Akiva comes along and says it's a riboy miyot to riboy. Everything's included with the exception of a shvua the dvar mitzvah, which is the one miyot from Ara Leitiv. Rabbi Shmuel says, klal uprat uklal, and therefore we only include Keina Prat. That works well, but we just don't know what the Keina Prat is. He suggests that the Keina Prat is, it has to be in the future, and that's what has to be similar to. Gemara wanted to know, why isn't it Laharaotiv, the thing that is much more fixed or stationary, can play around with the future and the past? So we had two answers to that. The first answer, which is that Rabbi Yitzchak's reasoning, which is, we want a violation that is a profaning of your word, and not a violation that is lying. And so that will only be true if you keep everything in the future tense. And we had Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avin, who just said that we want the shvua to precede the maaseh versus the maaseh to precede the shvua. And both of those reasonings, you would come to emphasize the future being the only thing that is stationary over here. And therefore, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that's the most important part here. It has to be a future tense shvua. If it's not in the future tense, then it's not a shvat bitui. Tan Rabbanan. So now we're going to move into a braita, which is somewhat cryptic, and then we're going to spend a lot of time trying to explain this braita. Hadam bishvua pratlanus. So this is a person has to be, the way Rashi describes it over here, she adam bishat shvua shelibo alav. His full head has to be there when he takes the shvua. He has to understand, know what he's doing, be completely aware of what he's doing when he takes the shvua. Pratlanus. Coming to exclude someone who is, in these cases, someone for whatever reason is missing information that doesn't allow them to take the shvuah in with a full head or complete understanding of what he is doing. Vine'alam, he forgets, prat lemezid, to exclude someone who does it intentionally. Mimenu, shnit alma mimenu shvuah, that he forgot the shvuah. Yachol shnit alma mimenu chefetz, think that he forgot the object, tamalomar bishvuah vine'alam. He took a shvua and forgot it. Al he'elam shvua u'chayav, benu chayav el helem chefetz. He is chayav for forgetting the shvua. He's not chayav for forgetting the object about which the shvua was taken. So again, here you have three sections to this braita, each of which needs explanation. The first of which it demands a person be fully engaged for the shvua to be binding. Number two is that you have to forget and not intentionally. And number three is the forgetting must be the forgetting of a shvua, not a forgetting of the object. Amar mar. Hadam bishvua prat nanus. Heichi dami. What exactly is the case here? How do you have a case like this? Kidder Rav Kahana v'Ravasi. It's a case like Rav Kahana v'Ravasi. Kavu kaime mikami derav. When they were sitting before Rav. Mar amar shvuata dahochi amar Rav. Says, I take a shvua. This is what Rav said. And the other one said, no, I take a shvua. This is what Rav said. They were arguing about what Rav had said, and each one of them were swearing that this is what Rav had said. Kiatu the kamed the Rav, when they came before Rav, Amar kechad minayu. He said one of them was correct. Amarle idach, the other one said, Fa'ana b'shikra ishtabai? Did I take a false shvua then? Amarle libcha anascha. No, your heart caused you to falter over here. Rashi says, "Kesavur aiti lishava be'emet." When you took the shvua, you thought you were taking a truthful shvua. You didn't think you were lying. You didn't think that what you were saying was incorrect. You believed exactly what you were saying. You were taking a shvua be'emet. And so therefore it's not considered to be a shvat bitoy or a shvat sheker in the end because you intended, when you took the shvua, for everything that you said to be true. So a number of things to discuss over here. First of all, just from a Musar Haskel, the Gemara over here does not tell you which of them made the mistake. Gemara says that they each took a shvua, that this is what Rav said, and when they came before Rav, Rav said one of them was right. He doesn't say which one was right. Again, it was irrelevant based on what Rav's conclusion is over here. It wasn't important who was right. It was important the lesson that we learned from this, that when a person has intent to speak the truth and takes the shvua based on that truth, that's called libcha anascha. That's the case of anus. That's a case where a person is under duress, we'll call it. But here the duress is his belief that what he is saying is true. There are other types of duress which the Gemara in Nidarim, the Mishnayot and Gemara in Nidarim deal with, where a person could be forced to be taking a shvua. Or a person can be under some other influence where they're taking a shvua where they really are anusim. That's not what the Gemara is looking for over here. The Gemara is looking over here for a case of what's called nidresh gagot, which Tosfot discusses over here. Nidresh gagot is a case where it's really, in a sense, ishkaga, but nevertheless, you do not qualify for a shvat bitui over here because of the fact that you're missing adam bishvua. The person has to be full-heartedly understanding that they're taking something that is incorrect, a false shvua, in order to be chayav. If they are being driven by a belief that they are saying the truth when they take the shvua, then that's not a shvat sheker. Tosafot, by proving from the Gemara Nidarim, to say not only were they not chayav in korban, even though, again, we're talking post-Beit HaMikdash in the time of Rav, nevertheless, we know from the Gemara in Shabbat that they used to write on their pinkasim that I'm chayav a chatat when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt. So not just the fact that you're not chayav a korban, but you're not even chayav for any sur or any onesh whatsoever. You're completely clear, free and clear. It was a true blue mistake, and you don't have to worry about it at all. That's the way that Tosafot concludes from here, based on the conclusion of the Gemara in Nidarim. And so that's what it means, anus. Anus means that you are completely free and clear, and you have no obligations here because you took a shua believing that what you said was correct. So that's Adam Bishvua. Now the Gemara moves on to the next part of the Braita. Ne'alam mimenu shenitalem mimenu shvua. That he forgot the shvua. Yochol shenitalem mimenu chayfetz. Tamalomar bishvua v'ne'alam mimenu. Elam shvua u'chayav v'nuchayav elam chayfetz. Mechaku alei b'marova. They laughed about this in Eretz Yisrael. Bishlomam shvua mishkachat la b'lo chayfetz. You can forget about a shvua without a chayfetz. Kigon. Damar shvua shlo chal pat chitin. Says, takes a shua that I will not eat a wheat loaf. Ukusavur shokhal kamar. And he forgot that he said, I won't eat. He thought he said, I will eat. Deshvuate inche. He forgot his shua. Chetza dokir. But he remembers the object of the shua. The object of the shua was a loaf of wheat bread. And he just forgot which verb he had used, to eat or not to eat. That's forgetting your shua. Elachefetz below shua echidami. How do you have a case where the person forgets the chayfetz, but not the shvua? Kigon, damar shvua shlo chal pat chitin. He says, shvua that I will not eat a loaf of wheat bread, ukusavur shel seorim kamar. And he thought that he had said barley bread, dishvuate dokirle, chefza inche. He remembers the shvua, but he forgot about which chayfetz it was said. So the Gemara says, Kevan dechepza inche lei haynu helem shvua. If he forgets the object, then he's also forgotten the shvua. The shvua contains two aspects to it. It contains the verb, which is to eat or not to eat, and it contains the object about which the shvua is about. So if you forget the object, you've also forgotten the shvua. Because you say, oh, I thought I made the shvua about barley bread and not about wheat bread, but that means you've also forgotten the shvua, because the shvua was about a particular object. And so when you forget the chayfetz, then you've also forgotten the shvua. So the two can't be separated, and that's why they laughed about it in Eretz Yisrael, because how do you separate out the chayfetz and say, I forgot the chayfetz without forgetting the shvua? The two are integrally connected. So Alamar Rabbi Lazar, da v'da achati. It's all one thing. So the way Rashi reads it, and the way majority of the Rishonim read it, the Braita is just incorrect, and there's no such separation between Chayfetz and Shvua. It's always Helem Shvua, and that's all there is. Helem Chayfetz is Helem Shvua. You can't have Helam Chayfetz without a Helam Shvua. That's a simple way to read it. Others read it if you have to leave out the word Ella. Ella always indicates in the Gemara that we're rejecting the previous statement, and therefore Rabbi Lazar comes along and says, whatever we said until now was wrong, and you have to read the Braita differently. If you leave out the word Ella, and you say, Amar Rabbi Lazar, da v'da chati, then you could say that this is actually plays into what's coming up next. The problem with this explanation is that Rava in a second is going to ask exactly this question, but what Rabbi Lazar basically says is you have both. When you forget about the chayfetz, you've forgotten the chayfetz, and you've forgotten the shvua. And what the pasuk in essence says is, helem shvua results in a korban, or a necessity for a korban. Helem chayfetz, which also includes helem shvua, does not result in a korban. In essence, what Belozer is saying is, you are patur. Even though, yes, helem chayfetz, by definition, is also helem shvua, but the Torah tells you you're only chayav for helem shvua, and you need helem shvua alone in order to be chayav. So that's the other way to read this Gemara. Again, the mainstream way to read it is the way Rashi reads it, which is he is saying that there is no distinction between them. So matkif la Rav Yosef, alma chayfetz below shvua lo mishkachad la. Why are you so certain that you can't have a chayfetz without a shvua? Va mishkachad la. I'll give you a case. Rav Yosef comes up with a scenario where it's the case. Could go. Damar shvua shlo uchal pat chitim. He says that I take a shvua that I will not eat pat chitim. Voshit yado l'sal litol pat se'orim. And he sticks his hand into the basket to peel out the barley bread. Valtam yado shel chitim. In the end, he gets a loaf of wheat bread. Kusavur se'orim he. He thinks that it's a barley bread, ve'achla, and then he eats it. Dishvuate dachile, he remembers the shvua, he knows he's not allowed to eat wheat bread, and he has no intention of eating wheat bread. Chetzahu galo yodole. The problem is that the chepetz that is in his hand, he made a mistake about. He misjudged it. He thought it was barley bread, and it turns out it was wheat bread. So here you have a case where the chepetz ne'alam, and the shvua is completely remembered. So Rav Yosef gives you a scenario where that is possible. Amalei Abaye. So Abaye, Rav Yosef's student, says back to him, Klo mechayvet le korban el amay de tofis biyodei, helem shvuahu. In the end, the reason that he is eating that which is in his hand is only because he doesn't know that this object is a pat chitim, thinking that he's not in violation of his shvua. And Mishnah Achrina in the other Lashon explains it more explicitly. Amalei Abaye and Rav Yosef, sof, korban de kamaiti ala de haipat, mia helem shvuahu. In the end, the reason that he's going to have to bring a korban is because he forgot the shvua. It's because he has pat chitim, which he thinks is pat seorim. And thinking that it was pat seorim, he eats it, thinking that he's not in violation of his shvua, because he thinks he's not eating the wrong thing. The shvua he thinks is not applicable to this object. And so basically he says the shvua is not relevant over here, which is a forgetting of the shvua. Rav Yosef Amar Lecha, Kevin Dechiyodala Dechitimu, Parish Minei Helem Chefetzu. So Rav Yosef says no, because had he known that it was a wheat loaf over here, he would have separated from it. So the question is, what is the element that is being forgotten over here? So according to Rav Yosef, if you look at the object is the cause for everything that happens over here. Rav Yosef says, listen, he picked out the wrong loaf of bread from the basket, so he's mistakenly eating this pat chitim as if it is pat se'orim. Okay, your reason that he's chayav for a korban is because he violated his shvuah. You're right. But it's the helem chefetz. The chefetz itself is what he has forgotten over here. And how do I know it's the helem chefetz? Because if you told him it was pat chitim, then he would drop it right away and he wouldn't eat it. So that tells you that he remembers the shvuah. There's no forgetting of the shvuah here. He remembers the shvuah entirely. It's the chefetz itself that's causing him to violate over here because he forgot, or he wasn't aware that this was a pat chitim. Had he been aware of that, he wouldn't have eaten it. So that is Rabbi Yosef's view. Abaye takes the opposite position and says that the pot that he ate, that pot is helem shvuah, because savar shlo nishbale. That object that he's looking at, he thinks he didn't take a shvuah about. The chefetz, he says, yes, I think it's pat sorim. So if it's pat sorim, he thinks that's not the shvuah that I took. I'm not responsible for it. So in the end, that is helem shvuah, according to Abaye. Abaye says, the shvuah he thinks is not applicable to this object. And so basically he says the shvua is not relevant over here, which is a forgetting of the shvua. So the difference between Abaye and Rav Yosef is, what do you focus on when there's a mistake? When he misjudges the object, and he gets the wrong object over here, what is the cause for his violation over here? According to Rav Yosef, the cause for the violation is the mistaken identification of the object. And the object is the key element over here, because if you correctly identify the object, he wouldn't do it. On the other hand, according to Abaye, the problem is that he thinks that the shvua is not applicable to this object. So the truth is, he's forgetting the shvua, or he thinks the shvua is not applicable in this instance. If he was made aware of the fact it was a pat chitim, then he would think the shvua is applicable. So he forgot the shvua. In a sense, he's taking the shvuah away from this situation because the object he thinks is not relevant to the shvuah. So that's how Abaye views it. So it's a question of which perspective you take it from. Is the object the cause for that change, or is it the lack of connecting it to the shvuah that's the cause for that change? Yosef says it's all about the object. Abaye says it's about your connecting the shvuah to the particular object. And if you don't think the object is relevant to your shvua, then you let the shvua go. And that's the forgetting of the shvua. So, by mine rova mi Rav Nachman, helam ze veze biyodo mahu. This is very similar to the question asked back on Daf Yutet Amud Aleph with regards to helam tuma and helam migdash. What happens if you have both of them in your hand? Over there we had a machloket to whether you're only chayav for helam tuma or you're also chayav for helam migdash. Well, according to one who says you only chayav elam tuma, what happens if you have both of them? Zeb is zeb yodo. Similarly over here, what happens if you have both helam shvua and helam chayfetz biyodo? Mau amrlei hare helam shvua biyodo v'chayav. He forgot the shvua, so he should be chayav. Adraba hare helam chayfetz biyodo patur. How do you know which one to emphasize? Amar Rav Ashi chazinan imach mat shvua kaparish hare helam shvua biyodo. If it's because of the shvua that he desists from doing this, then he forgot the shvua. V'chayav imachmat chayfetz kaparish hare helam chayfetz biyado patur. If it is the chayfetz, then that causes him to desist from it, then he is patur. Zamarli Ravina the Ravashi klum parish mishvua al mishum chayfetz klum parish mishayfetz al mishum shvua. They are integrally connected. How could you separate the two? Once he knows the chayfetz, he remembers the shvua. And if he knows the shvua, then he remembers the chayfetz. That's what causes him to desist over here. It's the two pieces together that cause him to desist. How can you say there's one over the other? Back on Daf Yutet, we gave the Rishonim's explanation to give more tam to Rav Ashi's explanation to say sometimes there's something that causes the person primarily to remember that he's in violation. That's one way to view what Rav Ashi say. The other one is to say that whatever he remembers second is the most important one, because whatever he remembers first doesn't change his mind. When he remembers the second item, that's what makes him change his mind, so maybe that's the most important thing, whatever he remembers second. We gave other explanations over there, how to explain Rav Ashi's explanation, but Ravina has a very strong position over here saying that the two are integrally connected and you can't really separate them. Ella, lo shna. It makes no difference. So now Rashi over here, similar to what he said back in Yotet Amud Aleph, says, lo shna upatur. Doesn't make a difference, and you are patur. You have the patur of helem chefetz makes you patur, and since there's helem chefetz over here, even though there's also helem shvua, you are patur. That's Rashi's view. The Rimi Gash, both there and over here, says, lo shna means it's a safek in halacha, which you don't have an answer to. I mean, the Gemara is leaving it as unresolved when it says lo shna. And then there is an alternate view, which is eloloshna, that you are chayav, that you would be chayav over here because you're dealing with a safek deoraita, and a safek deoraita, you would lean to saying that you are chayav a korban. Okay, by mine rova mi Rav Nachman. Ezohi shigigat shvat bitui l'she'avar. How do you have a shigigat shvua bitui in the past tense? Kevan Rashi says, the be'inan adam bishvua. How can you have ever a case of shogeg? If you remember, this is going back to what we just said about the two Amoraim who spoke in the name of Rav and both took a shvua. So they took a shvua that Rav said this. He took a shvua that Rav said this. Rav said you're both turim because libcha anascha, because you thought you were speaking the truth. So now the question you should have asked me at that time is, then how do you ever have a past tense shvua where you're going to be chayav? And that is idiyodo. If you know meizinu, then you're an intentional shvua, and then you're not a shogeg. Ida lo yada, if you don't know and you think you're telling the truth, anusu. So where is there ever a case of shogeg? That's the basic problem that we're faced with now, which is that you've changed everything that is basically shogeg into onus, because you said to me, if you think you're telling the truth when you take the shvua, then you don't have a dam b'shvua, then your mind wasn't in the shvua, you weren't wholeheartedly taking a shvua, and therefore you are patur, because you were anus, you thought you were telling the truth when you took that shvua. So where is there ever a case of shogeg where you're going to be chayav a korban? Korban shvat bitui only comes from bishkaga. If it's mezid, you're chayav makot. If it is be'anus, you're patur legamre. So where is ever the case of shogeg? And the basic problem, as explained by Rashi, is that you've changed what is considered to be shogeg b'chol haTorah kula, which is that a person forgets information that he should have known, and that information then causes him to do something unintentionally. That's called shkaga. But you just defined for us that if someone does that b'tom levav, and they say shvua, thinking that they are correct, and they've forgotten information that that's deemed to be anus, then what do you leave over for shkaga? So the Rashbam over here differentiates between two different types of shogeg. And he says that if it's a case where a person thought that they were telling the truth, they had misguided themselves, thought they were telling the truth, and then take a shvuah, that's a person who is exempted because of Adam b'shvuah, similar to what Rashi says over here, and he's deemed to be an anus, whereas in the Kol HaTorah Kula, he would be a shogeg. On the other hand, if the person takes a shvuah, knowing that it is a shvuah sheker, but thinks that that is mutar for whatever reason, that's a shogeg like Kol HaTorah Kula, and then you'll definitely be chayav a korban, and that's not what the Gemara is asking about over here. Gemara is not asking about the case where the person mistakenly assumes that which he's doing is correct, despite the fact that he knows he's taking a shvuah sheker. That we know is a case of shogeg, and he'll bring a korban like anywhere else in the Torah. The question revolves around the narrower instance where he thinks he's telling the truth, and he forgets pieces of information. Again, where's there a case there where you can have a shogeg case if you deem everything to be anus? So the Rashbam, in a sense, narrows the scope of where we're asking the question, because he deems that there is an area where everybody agrees you bring a korban, the shogeg, which is a case where you know you're doing something wrong, you just don't know the din. On the other hand, for Rashi, there's no separation between forgetting the din and forgetting the facts. If you forget either of those, you're deemed to be an anus, it seems like, by the korban for Shvat Bituay, and therefore, where's there ever a case of shogeg? For the Rashbam, there is, if you forget the din, where you're clearly chayav a korban, and there's a case where you are considered anus, which is where you forgot the facts, and you thought you were taking a shvuah be'emet. But then the Gemara's question about how do you have a case of shogeg is less relevant, because there is a case of shogeg. And so therefore the Ramban points out, according to the Rashbam, the question is shigagat korban? Is forgetting about the korban itself a considered to be a forgetting of the din? Or is that considered a forgetting of the facts? Which way do you look at it in that case? Which category does it fall into? Or the question could be closer to what Rashi's asking over here, which is, you can have a forgetting or a shichacha, la'atid lavo, a future shvuah, but how do you have that in a avar, in a past tense shvuah? So it's one thing to have a shigigah and a forgetting that can obligate you in a korban when you're dealing with a profaning of a shvuah in the atid, but how do you have something that's a forgetting, l'sha'avar, about something that is in the past tense? And so then that's the question that's being asked over here, according to the Rashbam. Amarle, be'omer yodeani she'shvua zu asura, aval eni yodea im chayaven aleha korban olav. It's a case where he says, I know this shvua is restricted, but I have no idea whether you're chayav a korban for it or not chayav a korban. So the idea is that you know you're violating the Shvuah, but you don't know whether you're going to be chayav a korban for it or not. So this is an interesting level of shogeg, which we're going to get to in 1 second. It's a machloket tanaim as to whether that is considered to be a shogeg or not. But the level of shogeg, what we're trying to explain here is that shogeg can come in different forms, which is that shogeg can be because I made a mistake and unintentionally violated something, or shogeg can come about because I don't know the law. I'm shogeg because I'm forgetting or a mistaken impression about the law. So there are different ways to be shogeg. One way to be shogeg is that I forgot, or unintentionally I didn't know some piece of information that I should have known. I should have been more focused on it. I didn't focus on the information, so I'm missing a piece of information, therefore I'm a shogeg. The other way to be a shogeg is I know all the information, but I have a mistaken impression about the law. And we have examples of that we saw in Sanhedrin, but Omer Mutar. The person says, oh, I think it's mutar to do this, even though it's asur. That's a form of shogeg. We had a machloket there, Amoraim, as to whether that is shogeg or not shogeg. But a similar idea over here. He knows it's asur, but he doesn't know it's going to result in a punishment of a korban. So that is the type of shogeg that we are speaking about over here. So the Gemara says, Kiman, who believes that forgetting the halacha is deemed to be a shogeg? Kimumbaz. That is similar to the position of Mumbaz. Damar shigigat korban shma shgaga. He says that if you forget or you don't know that something is chayav a korban, that deems you a shogeg. So this is a machloket in the Gemara in Shabbat, with regards to a regular korban shogeg. Nothing to do with shvat bitoy. Anytime you have a korban shogeg, how do you define shogeg? So over there, you have a definition of shogeg, which is either, again, you do something unintentionally, and you forget that it's Shabbat. You forget that this malacha is asura. So those are your typical cases of shogeg, where you're going to be chayav, like korban, for violating Shabbat b'shogeg. Munbaz adds into that case a case where the person knows it's restricted on Shabbat, but doesn't know he's chayav a korban for that violation. That's also called shogeg according to Munbaz. And so what the Gemara here is saying is that this Gemara, if you're going to define shogeg in this manner, that can only be according to Munbaz, not according to the Chachamim. My answer is afilu teima rabbonon. Even the Rabbanan over there would disagree with Munbaz. Ad kan lo plige korbanan ele de Munbaz. Over there, the Rabbanan argue on Munbaz. Ela de becholah Torah kula de lav chidushu. Because in the rest of the Torah, where there's no chidush, ava hacha de chidushu. Over here, where it is a chidush, de becholah Torah kula lo ashkechan lav de mighty korban. In the rest of the Torah, we don't find a simple lav that brings a korban. De alfino and me'avodah zarah. Because they learn from the paradigm of Avodah Zarah, v'hocha mighty, and here you do bring a korban, afilu rabbanon modu, in the rabbanon agree. So what the Gemara is saying over here is that there's a big distinction between your classic case of korban shkagah and a korban shkagah of shvat bitui. And everywhere else in the Torah, based on the paradigm of Avodah Zarah, you bring a korban shogeg because the isur is an isur karet. There is a chiyuv karet if you do it b'mezid. Therefore, if you do it the shogeg, you bring a korban bishkaga.
And so as Rav Soloveitchik explains in the Rishimot Shi'urim to Shavuot, the way to understand the position of the Chachamim is,
it is because of the severity of the Isur that generates the need for the korban over here. And so the argument over there between Munbaz and the Chachamim is, if the person forgets he is chayav a korban for this, is that considered to be shogeg? According to the Chachamim, that's not shogeg, because the problem or the reason you bring a korban in the rest of the Torah is because of the severity of the violation. The severity of the violation is your chayav karet b'mezid. This person knows he's violating the isur. So he is violating it, and he knows he's violating an isur. He knows the severity of the isur. That does not make you into a shogeg. And that's why the Chachamim say in the rest of the Torah, you cannot say that if you don't know it's chayav a korban, that that gets you a label of shogeg. In the case of shvuat bitui is a lav. There is no chiyuv karet. If a person does a shvuat bitui, intentionally takes a shvuat bitui and violates it, he's chayav malkot. He's not chayav karet, he's chayav malkot. That's what the Gemara says here. You don't find another korban b'shogeg that comes because of a violation of a lav. Over here, the korban doesn't become because of the severity of the violation. It becomes because of the gezeret hakatuv, that shvuat bitui ends up with a korban. It derives from the fact that you profaned your shvuah. And so any shkaga, any forgetting, any non-understanding of what you're doing in the profaning of the shvuah, including not knowing that you have to bring a korban for it, that's deemed to be a shkaga in the case of shvat bitui and the korban associated with it. And that's the difference. So the Chachamim say, by the case of regular shogeg, it's the severity of the violation that is the problem. And if you know you're doing the violation, then you can't be called a shogeg anymore because you violated it knowing that you violated it. So you don't know you're chayav a korban, you're not going to be a shogeg in that case. On the other hand, here, by shvat bitui, it's not the severity, it is the fact that you're chayav a korban for shogeg, because that's the gezeret hakatuv. If you're missing that information, you're missing something that's integral to the lav itself. The lav itself would not precipitate a korban. It's not such a severe lav. The reason you bring a korban is gezeret hakatuv. If you're missing that information, then you're also a shogeg, because you're missing something that's integral to the understanding of the violation over here. The fact that you've profaned your shvuah. And that's the difference between them. So that's why even the Rabbanan can agree over here that you're considered to be a shogeg. Now, Bali Tosafot over here discusses the Gemara in Shabbat, where Abaye over there concludes that this braita is only according to Munbaz and not according to the Chachamim. And the question is how to reconcile between that Gemara over there where Abaye clearly says it's only Munbaz who can be the author of this braita versus our Gemara who says that even the Chachamim can be the authors of that braita. How do you reconcile between Abaye's conclusion over there and what the Gemara is saying over here, as well as there's a change in Girsa in the Gemara in Shabbat, Machloka between Rashi and the Balei Tosafot, that all influence how you reconcile those Gemaras.
And that is what drives that alternative view that we brought in the Rashbam before as to what the question of the Gemara is. You can see that at the end of the Balei Tosafot, and that's why we brought that alternate explanation of the Rashbam to Rashi's explanation of the Gemara over here.
But just so you know, that's out there, that this conclusion of the Gemara here is not the way that the Gemara concludes in the Gemara in Shabbat. Right? Bar mine ravina meirova. Nishba al kikar umistakein alei. Person took a shvua about a kikar, and then he is deathly ill, and he needs to eat it. Mahu. What is the din? Mistakein. If he's deathly ill, and he needs it, he's besakana, lishleimar. Then be matrim. So even though he ate it now, forgetting the shvua, nevertheless, the whole reason he ate it is because of pikuach nefesh. And had he come to us and asked us, should he eat it, we would have told him to violate the shvua, because it's pikuach nefesh. So why does it matter that he has Helem Shvua and it was a Shgaga over here? The Shgaga is irrelevant in the context of the situation, which is Pikuach Nefesh. That says if it was Pikuach Nefesh, even if he didn't have Helem Shvua, we would have tell him to violate the Shvua. When he does have Helem Shvua, he's not going to be Chayav a Korban in that case, because it was Pikuach Nefesh. We would have been Matir for him anyway, so if he eats it in violation of his Shvua, there's no violation of the Shvua. Ein davar omei bifnei Pikuach Nefesh. And so therefore, it could have violated the Shvua anyway. So that can't be the question. Ela mitzta'er v'achla b'shigigat Shvua mai. If he was in pain over it, and he ate it, b'shigigat Shvua, forgetting the Shvua, what is the din? So Rashi over here says, what's the mitzta'er? Mitzta'er barav. He's starving, he's hungry. He's not deathly ill. He's not in danger of dying. He's just really hungry. And Rashi says, even if he didn't forget the Shvua, he would have eaten it anyway. He was so hungry, he was so captured by this loaf of bread that he wanted to eat it. Happens to be that he forgot his Shvua and he ate it while forgetting the Shvua. But had he not forgotten the Shvua, he would have eaten it anyway. He would have violated the Shvua, irrespective of whether he forgot the Shvua or not. So what's the din here? Amalei, Tanina, that's a Mishnah. Shav midiato mevi korban al shigagato. Someone who has regret, remorse over their violation, they bring a korban shkaga. Lo shav midiato, someone who does not regret it, enu mevi korban al shigagato, does not bring a korban al shkaga. As Rashi explains over here, this person, even when you remind him about the Shvua, he would still violate the Shvua. So this is not a person who has remorse or regret about violating the Shvua. Had he known about the Shvua, he would have done this anyway. So this can't be a person who has Shava, that is return, has regret, remorse. That's not the case over here. So you can't bring a Korban if you're Omeid B'merdo. If you remain steadfast in your rebellion, meaning that you would have eaten it, even if you know the Shvua. So this isn't a person who is regretting or would have changed his mind, and therefore there's no need to bring a Korban. That's the way Rashi reads the mitzter over here. Tosafot does not like Rashi's mitzter, but he says here, near the Farish, the mitzter al masha'inu shokheach. He was upset that he didn't forget his Shvua. She'er etzono shishkach kadei she'ochal. He wanted to forget the Shvua so that he could eat the bread. He knew the Shvua, and therefore he didn't eat the loaf. And he's mitzter, I wish I forgot the Shvua so that I could eat the bread. And then sure enough, he eventually does forget about the Shvua and eats the loaf of bread. Is he considered to be a shogeg because he forgot the Shvua? Or, in the end, Rabbi Tos would say, had he not forgotten the Shvua, he would have eaten it anyway, and he would have done it b'mezi. So he was hoping to forget the Shvua, and sure enough, his wish came true, and he forgot the Shvua. But had he not forgotten the Shvua, he would have eaten it b'mezid, And so then the answer is the same thing by Rashi, which is, this is a person who would have violated the Shvuah wantonly anyway, and so therefore there's no Shav Midiyato. This is a person, if he had not forgotten the Shvuah, would have been violated it b'mezid, and so therefore he can't bring a Korban. That's the way Rashi reads it, that's the way the Balei HaTosafot read it. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Hananel has the opposite view over here. He says that Shav Midiyato means that he does bring a Korban. He says here, he says that this is a person that is Shav Miyadiyato. Homar. Mishyaseb Shkaga. Kevin Shatap Miyadiyato Shasur Hu Parish. As soon as you tell him afterwards that it's a sur, he would have separated. That's someone who brings a Korban on a Shkaga. Vainami Shav Miyadiyato. This guy also, had he known, he wouldn't have done it. V'chayav Korban. And therefore you are Chayav a Korban. So the Rabbeinu Hananel comes to the opposite conclusion of Rashi and the Balei Tosafot. Then he brings V'yesh Omrim. Kevin Simitzdarele, Afagav Shata, Midiato, Lo Parish, Afilo Machlo B'shogei, Kamo Mezid Chashiv. So then he brings the alternate, which is the way Rashi and the Balei Tosafot read it, which is that he's so Mitzdair that even when you remind him, he wouldn't have changed his mind. So that's the difference between them, but the Rabbeinu Hananel gives you that alternative view, which is that he would bring a Korban because even though there was an exogenous variable that was causing him to forget over here, and that would precipitate, according to Rashi and the Tosafot, his forgetting, nevertheless, and you reminded him, and you pressed him a little bit, he would have backed away from it, and that's what the Rabbeinu Hananel suggests over here, that he is Shav Midiyato. Had you reminded him, had you prodded him a little bit, he would have stopped and he would have woken up from this stupor of being mitzta'er over this item, and he would have desisted from violating the Isur, regretted violating the Isur. So even though he might have done this irrespective of forgetting the Shvuah, in the end he did forget the Shvuah. And the suggestion is, had you reminded him about the Shvuah, he might have desisted from it, or he would have desisted from it, and therefore he is Chayov HaKorban, according to the Rabbeinu Hananel. Alright, Amar Shmuel, Gamar Belibo, Tzarich Shiotzi Bisvatav. Someone concludes in their heart that they want to take a Shvuah, then they need to articulate it and to state that which they are thinking. Shenemar Livatei Bisvatayim. You must articulate, you must say that which you are feeling. A Shvuah is not something that you take in your heart. A Shvuah is something that you articulate and give verbal recognition to that which is in your heart. Beitavei, is that really true? Bisvatayim velo belev. You have to articulate a Shvuah and not just think about a Shvuah. Gamar milibo minayim. If he just thinks in his heart, how do we know that that is a Shvuah? Tomaloma lechol asher yivate adam bishvuah. So the chol, it seems to be a riboy over here, that anything that a person takes as a shvuah will be deemed a shvuah. Ha gufa kasha, the brayta itself has a stira. Amart bisvatayim velo belev. You first say that you can only take a shvuah by articulation and not in your heart. Vada amart, and then after you say gamar milibo minayin. Right after that you say, well, if he concludes in his heart, how do you know that that works? That's a stira. So amar av sheshet, halokasho, that's not a problem. Hachi ke amar, bisfatayim, velo shigamar libilibo lotzi bisfatav, velo hotzi. That bisfatayim, you have to articulate it, and not where he had concluded that he wanted to take this shvuah, and articulate it, but did not articulate it. Gamar bilibo stam, minayin. But if he just concluded in his heart that he wants this shvuah, how do I know? Tamaloma lechol sheyivateh. So Rav Sheshet gives explanation to the Braita and separates the Braita into two cases. The first case in the Braita is a case where the person in his heart had intended to articulate the Shvuah and then doesn't articulate the Shvuah, so there's a failure in that which he had thought. And that failure makes it that it's not a Shvuah. On the other hand, if he simply has it in his heart that he wants to take the Shvuah and never intends to articulate it, how do we know that that's a binding Shvuah? And that's the way to explain the Braita. The Gemara says, but then Shmuel, how do we explain Shmuel? Shmuel says there's a need for articulation over here. The Braita does not demand that. Now the truth is, as the Balei Tosafot point out, you could have answered for Shmuel the same way we answered for the Braita. So why doesn't the Gemara just say that? The answer is because Shmuel's an Amora and the Braita is a Tana. A Tana writes in shorthand, and therefore we can explain or explicate on his words to make meaning out of that which he said. And Amora, there's a demand that he explain himself. And if he doesn't do that, we're not going to then enter meaning into his statements that he otherwise should have articulated himself. So Shmuel, we're not going to read into Shmuel that which we just read into the Braita, because Shmuel should have said that if that's what he meant. So now Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshet, Taritz ve'ema hochi. This is the way that you can explain it. Although you can see here that the Rabbeinu Hananel has an alternate girsa, which is Amar Rova, Taritz ve'ema hochi. The second way to explain the Braita is brought from Rova and not from Rav Sheshet again. Bisfatayim, Veloshe gamar b'libo lotzi pat chitim, votzi pat seorim. Gamar b'libo lotzi pat chitim, votzi pat stam, minayin, tamalomar l'choloshe yivate adam. So Rav Sheshet comes up with a different way to explain the Braita that then will not be in contradiction with Shmuel's position. And that is, bisfatayim, veloshe gamar b'libo lotzi pat chitim. He had intended in his heart to take his shvua that he would not eat a loaf of bread that was made of wheat. In the end, when he articulated it, he said something different than he thought. So that's the first part of the Braita. How do I know that if you don't do it bisfatayim and lo believe, that means that it's got to be something that you articulate, and you must articulate that which you intended. If you articulate something different than you intended, then you will not be bound by that shvua, because there's a dissonance between that which you said and that which you thought. On the other hand, if you say, I intend to take a shvua about pat chitim, but then when you articulate the shvua, you just simply say pat stam, then that will be defined by gamar milibo. That which is in your heart will define that which you say, and the pat that you say then will be pat chitim, even though you only said pat stam. Because that which you said is not necessarily in dissonance with that which you thought. You just didn't explicate on what you were saying. You didn't go out to define pat chitim, you just said pat stam. But that pat stam will be defined by what you thought, and now it will be governed that you are only bound by a shvua pat chitim, and that is tamal omar sheyivadeh adam, and that will be in concert with what Shmuel said is that you must articulate. Both of these cases require that you articulate. The first case, it fails because you did not articulate that which you were thinking. The second case works because you did articulate, not fully, what you were thinking. But as long as you did something that's not in dissonance with that which you're thinking, and we could define what you said by that which you thought, then that will be binding as a shvua, and that will be along the lines of what Shmuel said, that you have to articulate that which you are thinking. And in that way, the Braita and Shmuel can be reconciled. The problem then involves way around the Gemara and the Darim, and that's what the Bali Tosafot spend a lot of time on, which is that Dvarim Shvalev Enam Dvarim. In general, we say things that are in a person's heart are not considered to be valid when it comes to the Darim. As Tosafot says over here, Va'af gav disfirlan Dvarim Shvalev Enam Dvarim, the Gabayon Sin Efshar, Mashma Delo Sharler B'makom Ones. That only in a case where the person is put under duress, where they are forcing him to do something, do we say Dvarim Shvalev are considered Dvarim. But outside of that, we don't. So over here, why should he be then only Asur in Pat Chitim? He should be Asur in Pat Degamre. The first answer Tosfot gives is, Veish Lomar, that over there it's speaking about an Amaretz. The only time that we give an exception to the rule of Dvarim Shvalev in Dvarim is by an Amaretz, by Onsin. But in other cases of Nidarim, we won't allow them to have Dvarim Shalei Vein Dvarim, because otherwise they're going to make a mockery of Nidarim. They're always going to say, oh, this is what I meant, or this is what I was thinking, and they'll make things up, and then they will, in a sense, take away any semblance of severity with regards to Nidarim. So in a case where they're Anusim, and then there is circumstantial evidence that that's what they meant, then we will assume that the way that they define it makes sense. On the other hand, any example outside of Unsin, we will assume that whatever they said is what they meant, and Dvarim Shalev Enam Dvarim. But by a Talmud Chacham, we won't say that. A Talmud Chacham understands the severity and the significance of a neder. If he tells us that he had something else in mind, or he had something in mind in particular, then we will believe that, and that will give definition to the neder. Now, the Ran in the Darim spends a lot of time on this, saying that it has to be something that is a plausible explanation. It has to be something that would make sense, that that's what the person meant in the context of the nether. They can't all of a sudden make up some crazy thought about what the nether was about or what defined the nether. It has to be something of a reasonable nature. But if it is reasonable, then we would believe that the Dvarim Shalev are Dvarim for a Talmud Chacham. So that's one way the Bali Tosafot deal with it. Then he suggests, Bo'nira d'hocha stampat avim chitin. V'lohochi shari afilu shalom makom onis. That maybe over here, the rule has nothing to do with the Talmud Chacham versus the Amaretz, but rather the fact that stam pat is pat chitin. If a person says bread, and bread in general refers to pat chitin. So when he tells us that's what he had in mind, that's not a ridiculous assumption, that's basically what the word pat means, v'lashon b'nei adam. So when he says, I meant pat chitin, when I said pat, we would say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because stam b'nei adam, when they say pat, they mean pat chitin. And in that way, it is different than the cases in the Darim, where the person is trying to change the duration of the neder, or change the scope of the neder. Over here, the word pat by itself really does mean pat chitin. So when he tells us that, we believe that that's what he meant when he said the word pat. The Ramban, on the other hand, differentiates between the case of Nidarim and the case of Shvuot, to say that by the case of Nidarim, that's what he said, and that which was in his heart, are actually in tandem. The only problem is that there is a scope of time that was different. For instance, if he had intended to say that I restrict all peirot in the world on me for today, but instead when he expressed it and he articulated, he said, I restrict all peirot on me, and then he never gave a time definition to it, so which means basically the olam, that's always going to be that way. In a sense, his piv libo are shavim. He wanted to restrict all peirot olam on himself. The only problem was that he didn't define the scope. So in a sense, the nether is binding because piv libo shavim. He said what he intended. He wanted to aser all the peirot olam on him. The time, the scope, is what he left out, and that we say dvarim shvilei v'enam dvarim. But in our case over here, there is no piv libo shavim. When he says shvua shelo ochal pat, versus shvua shelo ochal pat chitim, then he never articulated what he wanted to say. He wanted to restrict wheat bread. Instead, he restricted all bread. So there's no consonance between that which he's saying and that's what he's thinking. And therefore, the neder would fall apart if it were not for the riboy of the pasuk that says that you are a sewer over here. The riboy of the pasuk says, yes, the neder is binding, binding with that which you thought, that which you had in your lathe, and that means that it's a shua shlo chal pat chitim. And therefore the shua is binding, but binding based on the riboy of pasuk that says dvarim shvilev are dvarim. And that's how the Ramban reconciles between our Gemara here and that Gemara in Nidarim. Meitavei. Motzeis fatecha tishmor vasita. Person must be bound by that which they articulate. Ein li ela shotzi bisfatav. But that's only if he actually articulated it. Gabar bilibo minayin. How do I know if he thought something or concluded something in his heart that he's also bound by that? Tamalomar kol nidiv leiv. Anybody who donates generously of their heart, they're considered to be bound by that donation. So Gemara says, shiny hotam, that's different over there, dichtiv kol nidiv leiv, that it says kol nidiv leiv. So it tells you that someone who donates by thinking they want to give, or concludes in their heart that they want to do something, that that's binding on them to carry it out. V'nigmar minei. So let us use that as a precedent to say that anywhere where a person is bound by articulation, they will also be bound by their thoughts. Hashem dami tshuma v'kodoshim shnei k'tuvim abayim k'echad. Chol shnei k'tuvim abayim k'echad ein melamdim. Because we have two psukim that come together that have this fact. And as we've said many times, if the Torah wants to set out a precedent, it tells you one time, but that becomes a paradigm. If you say it, the Torah tells you the same din twice, it's telling you that these are the exceptions to the rule and not the rule itself. And so over here we have two precedents for saying that something in your heart is binding. That tells you that these are the exceptions to the rule and that is not the rule itself. As Rashi notes over here, the two places where Nediv Lev are mentioned, one is by the Truma here that is mentioned is Trumat Melechet HaMishkan, are the donations to the Mishkan, and the other one is found by the Kodeshim in Chizkiyahu and Divrei Yamim Bet, that Chol Nediv Lev Olot, that whoever contributed in their heart towards the Kodeshim is bound by that contribution. So you have two examples where the Torah tells you that a Nediv Lev is bound. One of them is by the donations to the Mishkan. One of them is donations to Korbanot. And in both those cases, they're binding. And those are the exception to the rule and not the rule. The Baalei Tosafot say that the Truma references to literally Truma. You can see this in the Rabbeinu Chananel. Kodeshim ha-damran b'truma dichtibem nechshav lechem trumatchem melameid sh'atruma nitelet ba'umeid u'memachshava. That one can separate out trumot and masrot without articulation, simply by thinking about the separation. Gemara says, anicha l'mandamare melamdim. That works well according to the one who says, when you have two statements in the Torah, they become the exception to the rule and not the paradigm. L'mandamare melamdim. According to the one who says, they can still teach. It only becomes exceptions to the rule when you have three cases, not when you have two. Ma'ika l'meimar. Both of these cases are in Kodoshim, which is either Trumat HaMishkan and Kodoshim by Chizkiyahu. So the Beinu Chananel sees Truma as being in that world of Kodoshim. V'Truma v'Kodoshim, Kodesh v'Chulim v'Kodoshim lo yofinan. And therefore you can't learn Chulim from it. According to the Baalei Tosafot, even though Truma is considered Chulim, and Truma vis-a-vis Kodesh is considered to be chulin, nevertheless, kodashim can be learned from truma, which can teach you to kodashim, and kodashim by Chizkiyahu, and therefore you can't learn to chulin from kodashim. And so even though maybe they are a paradigm according to that mandamar, that shnik tuvim abayim keachad melamdim, nevertheless, they can't be melamed over here because you're trying to learn from kodashim to chulin, and Kodeshim is its own world, and you can't extrapolate something from Kodeshim to Chulin, and therefore by Chulin you require articulation, and it's not enough to simply have in mind to do something, or have in mind to take a Shavuah, you must articulate that Shavuah. But even in those areas where we accept Nediv Lev, and that a contribution through the heart is a binding contribution, it has to be Pivli Bo Shavim. Meaning that if he has no articulation, then it's binding what he thought. But if he thinks something and then he articulates something else, then pivlibo enam shavim, and it's not binding, even though he had something in mind, but he articulated something different, then that undermines that which he was thinking, and then nothing is binding over there. So if a person had in mind to bring an olah, and instead says a shlamim, or vice versa, or you can see there Rabbeinu Chananel, he intends for truma, and he calls it maser, none of those are binding because the person was thinking one thing and ended up articulating something else.